Appreciate it very much, Jeff.
And Jeff, it's good to see you. We hadn't gotten a chance to say hi to each other. I like how Dick is very commanding. You know, you're on. Go. We're going to move away from the anthropology and just go to politics today. And to look at what is the nature of modern fundamentalism. And when I'm talking about modern, I'm sorry, that phrase, that's Carl Henry wrote a book, theologian, a number of years ago, The Uneasy Conscience of Modern Fundamentalism. So through my talk, when I'm saying modern fundamentalism, just switch that. Modern feminism, when I say this, I am not just talking about like the woman's effort to, you know, be considered. I'm talking about this radical idea, again, that the best way to be a woman is to be a man, to be sexually aggressive, to get out into the marketplace, to stay home and raise and have the next generation is stifling. In fact, this irony that with many radical feminists is that to abort your child is more freeing, more declarative of your power than to bring that child into the world. It is, I mean, it's obscene. It's demonic. You know, it is, ladies, deny, deny, deny who you are. Think about this. If I am a leader in the black community, a leader in the Asian community, my Asian friends at every turn deny who you are as Asians. Try to be like, you know, Caucasian Americans. My black friends, deny, deny, deny your blackness and try to be like the white man. I mean, like, no movement that is like the Women's March. Women, women power. It is women, let's give away all of our distinctly female, feminine power. And as we've talked about, that is not just power to guide the home. It is the power that guides humanity. Let's give that up, ladies, and let's create a situation where we have to fight and demand and argue for people to take us seriously. It's an irony, and it's a devastating irony. And that's why feminism today is declining. Because many of the, you know, second wave feminists, and there are young women today doing this, but most of them grew up with their feminist mothers, and they're like, you know what, I don't want to be a latchkey kid. I want my career, I want to go to Harvard, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, but here's what I'm going to do. I am really going to try to balance motherhood and my children with the career that I want. And if push comes to shove, I'm going to choose over here before, you know, with this power balance, my interest is really over here in my real femininity, in my real womanhood. I want to give you two examples of early feminism. This is Susan B. Anthony, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, not related to me, I don't think. But those early, early feminists, they have been hijacked by feminists today. Those women were, they would be seen as traitors today. Absolutely traitors under the thumbs of men. First of all, they were fiercely, fiercely pro-life. Fiercely pro-maternity. Again, I wrote a piece of number probably 3 years ago for the Federalist on, let's hear from these early feminists on the issue of abortion. And going back to their original writings. And again, that's another way that I do my research, is find the facsimiles online. You used to have to go to the library and find this stuff. You can find this stuff online. Here is a picture from the actual article from the New York Times from 1919. You can read it, and you can see the words that these women wrote and said. They are fierce pro-lifers, pro-woman, pro-life. And it was the radical, if you will, truly radical, like, yeah, those women over there, they do not speak for us. The kind of pro-abortion like Margaret Sanger, who started Planned Parenthood, things like that. Here's another thing, and Gail Collins, in her book, The America's Women, she says that women's suffrage, the suffragettes, were not radical, independent, let's fight for our rights women. She goes into great detail how that movement, the woman's right to vote, was all about wife, being a wife, being a mother, and domesticity. How in the world is that? She said, these women, were fighting for the right to vote in prohibition. And prohibition, because, ladies, we've got to find a way to keep our men and their paychecks out of the bars, because that's where they're going. They're buying whiskey and not milk for their babies. We've got to find a way to change that. And so she says in that book, and this is fascinating, my mind is just not sharp this morning. The women, and I was trying to think of the name of this group of women, the women fighting for the right to vote just on its face, okay? She says the largest group of those women were not as large as the smallest group of, and here's the name of, what was the group that was fighting against alcohol? Prohibitionist. Temperance movement, exactly. Because that was the woman part of it, okay? The temperance movement, to get their men to be temperate with alcohol, that the smallest suffragette group, just fighting for the woman's right to vote in and of itself, the largest group was not as large as the smallest temperance group. That whole movement was run by mothers and wives to impact male behavior. And again, Rosie the Riveter. Rosie the Riveter was not this radical feminist. She was, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, our men are all fighting this battle, let us step up. And Rosie the Riveter started in World War I. If you look at that, I mean, those women in World War I, they stepped up. There's wonderful pictures of those women with bandanas. They're in the factories. They're working. And again, it wasn't out of high ideals of feminism. It was really quite domestic, patriotic, and traditional. I mean, again, that's the irony. Is, if you will, and this is kind of radical, but like Rosie the Riveter was perhaps like the female Trump voter today. You know, it was like make America great in that sense. And I don't mean the other parts of Trump, but like, no, they were not radicals. They were Americans. Let's do this. Let's hang together. Patriotism. And again, radical feminists is a appropriating, they can appropriate, you know, these things that just were not true about their finding. But truth doesn't really matter as long as you're right and you have higher ideals, right? And Trump's the liar, you know? I want to, and this is a fascinating thing too. You know, lots of women here, and you are, every one of you, I bet, are strong, unapologetic women, okay? How many of you went to the Women's March? Fighting for a woman's right. I mean, this thing of, we are defending women. You know what? You are not. It's interesting. I went to a convention. This was quite a few months ago in Las Vegas, and it was the Religion News Writers Convention, and they had this panel on abortion, and there was Father Pavone, who runs Priests for Life, stalwart, dogged. He was on this panel, and on either side of him, there was a Jewish woman and there was a Muslim woman. And both of them were arguing, I mean, just pro-abortion, pro-abortion. And this woman on this end, she was presenting it without the slightest nuance of, this is about women. This issue is the one that stands in the way of whether women are full citizens or not full citizens. And she just kept hammering that. Well, I got up to stand in line to ask questions, and I didn't get up there. So actually, this was kind of good. I got to speak to her personally afterward. And there was a woman behind me, and she was pretty, young woman, pretty hip looking. You know, so I'm like, okay, where is she coming from? She's like, yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to ask our question. So, you know what, let's go up afterwards. I didn't know what her question was going to be. I didn't know where she was coming from. I thought, you know, she would be the opposite of where I was. So I went up to this woman and I said, now you said, you know, this about women, and how all of this hinges on abortion, and that men who oppose abortion are lock, stock, and barrel against the well-being of women. I said, what do you do with nearly every poll that says that opposition to abortion is equally split between men and women? You know? Here's what she said. I mean, this is so stinking arrogant. She goes, well, most of those women simply do what their husbands tell them to do. And I'm like, yeah, half the female population. And so I go, wow. And the woman behind me, she goes, yeah, his question, that's my question. Okay, sharp young woman. And I go, wow. I mean, like, just felt it in my core. I'm like, how patriarchal is that? I mean, stunning. And I'm like, every woman? She goes, well, maybe not every woman. She said the rest of them are so indoctrinated by our culture that they do not even know what's in their best interest. I'm like, oh, that's much better. And those are the women that are representing you at the Women's March. You know what that's similar to? And it really does bug me. The Gentlemen's Club. Right? Yeah. No, do not use that word for this redefinition of what you want to do. It's the same thing like adult films. You know? Like, yeah, no. That's an affront to all adults. Okay? So, this is a video. This guy, Joseph Backholm, he was the Jeff Laszloffy for Washington State. He ran their Washington State FPC, but now he works for the Colson Center, and he makes videos basically going out and interviewing, but also teaching what it is we believe about the things we believe and why. But this is him last week going to the Women's March, asking some very basic, unloaded questions. And so, like that woman at the conference in Las Vegas, these are the women that are representing you as women. We're going to make sure, see if this works. Help. I tested it. Oh, you know what?
I think we see it advance.
No. It's, I wonder if maybe I'm not connected to...
Here. Do you need to be connected to the...
The Wi-Fi. Yeah. So, okay, so I, yeah, I'm connected. Speak amongst yourselves. let's go, let's do this. But not too loudly. Oh, here it is.
You don't know. Nice. So, let's put that up on me.
New York Women's March in Washington, D.C. And today, we're going to...
Okay, so let's full screen this.
So now, what we need to do, real quick...
Technology is your friend until it's not.
Right.
Back a truck onto a trailer or anything like that.
There's just a big struggle for respect in employment and assignments that are given and pay that was given.
I think equal, like, there's no equal pay at all.
Women have to work so much harder to get to the point that men can easily get to.
How would you define what a woman is?
How do you define what a woman is?
Oh my god!
I think a woman, well, that's a trick question.
Oh wow.
I think a woman is anything that she wants to be defined as.
Well, that's a good question. Let me think about that.
A human being.
She's an individual.
A woman is powerful. A woman is really the creator of our society. Without women, like, we won't even be able to reproduce the planet.
Like, we're selling uterus pins, that doesn't mean that if you have a uterus, you're a woman, or if you don't have one, you're not a woman.
So I think a woman is someone who chooses to express themselves.
We can express our womanhood in so many ways that it is just unfathomable.
Well, can be in the feminine way, but also can be in a non-black binary way as well.
Wow. How would I define what a woman is? There's so many aspects.
A woman is love and strength and power.
I in a short interview, I'm not even sure how to answer that.
A woman is anyone that identifies as a woman. Simple as that.
I think a woman is, like, if you identify as a woman, if you want to be a woman, then you're a woman.
Are there any innate differences between men and women today?
I don't want to answer that question, actually.
Do you think that anyone can be a woman?
Anyone probably could be a physical woman if they would like to.
If they want to.
Yes. I think it's a choice.
Yes. Yes, because I think it's a mindset.
I think anybody can be a woman.
Can anyone be a woman?
I think it's a process.
Yeah.
How would you define what a woman is?
is to help people answer questions about faith and culture. So if you'd like answers to questions about gender, go ahead and click here or here. If you'd like answers to questions about other issues, check out the rest of our channel. And if you'd like to see future videos, including more from our visit to the Women's March, subscribe below.
It's interesting, when Joseph does that, I've told him, like, you know, you're interviewing and you know the camera is here and you're like, the answer's like, do you want to just look at the camera, like, seriously? But ladies, your future is in good hands. These are the people that are going to D.C. to stand up for you. They can't define what they are about. And they also say, anybody who wants to come along and call themselves a woman, I mean, could you imagine Malcolm X? Like, what is a black man? A black man is an individual, man or woman, who simply comes along and declares themselves black. He would lose his job immediately, right? And it's interesting that this is the crash of lies, okay? There is this term, TERFs. These are trans-exclusionary radical feminists. And this is the crash of these two groups. The TERFs, and that's a derogative name that many people in the trans community call these radical feminists. Thank you. Because they say, as radical feminists, okay, first of all, let me tell you this. Let me tell you who the TERFs are. As radical feminists, they are saying, you know what, we have been here showing up for decades for this work, down for the cause, fighting for women, and dude, you just got breasts last week, and you want to join, you know, think about this in the radical sort of way. Don't bring that male body part into this meeting and say that you are a woman. That is an offense to what womanhood is, right? Think about that, okay? Go online and, you don't want to do this, but if you Google TERFs and look like on Twitter, you will see phrases, death to TERFs, die scum TERFs, the best TERF is a dead TERF. These are the trans people response to the radical feminists. So this, you have this conflict to the death threats on the left, because basically you have this craziness of gender theory slamming up against feminists, radical feminist theory. I mean, it's amazing, right? And when you tell lies, we tell our kids, if you're going to be a liar, you've got to have a good memory. We're not giving our kids advice on how to be good liars. We're saying, here's what's going to happen. You are going to contradict yourself. The feminists, radical feminists, and gender theorists are telling lies about what it means to be human, about what it means to be a man, a woman. And these two things are like intersection. And the TERFs are demonstrating that. It is a fascinating thing. So this is the quote I gave you earlier, the ironies of feminism. The feminist, which means, I think, one who dislikes the chief feminine characteristics. Listen to those women, except for, and I have to confess, that I'm going to stop doing this, and I think all you men should stop doing this. When you see a woman backing up a trailer and going and saying, honey, can I do that for you? That woman's comment, you know, opening a door for me. Getting in there when I'm backing up a trailer. When has that ever happened? I guess it's happened to her. But again, that thing is just my essence of a woman can get men to do things for me. That's called power, right? And they don't recognize that. The other is, and this is a big, big thing, and I use this analogy, is the women's marches are so stinking, they're angry. Look at all of the signs. They are angry. And that does not come from a position of confidence. I am who I am. You're going to have to deal with me. I use this analogy, and I don't mean this like this person is great, but you think about the difference between Whoopi Goldberg and Oprah. Oprah, I mean, in terms of career, rocks the world. She's got power, but she shows up, I am a woman because I'm just standing here. Like we talked about last night. A woman is a woman who just shows up, and she is a woman because of her essence. You have Whoopi over here who always has to remind you, don't forget, I'm powerful. Right? We know why she keeps saying that, because she is insecure in her own power, which is not powerful. Right? It's really remarkable and fascinating. The other thing is, and these are these stereotypes, that most women, like Oprah, who are breaking barriers, most women who are breaking barriers are unapologetically feminine. Think about this, and I'm going to give you some examples of women who are going out and rocking the world in a man's world. Just think about that. The woman who wrote the book Lean In, she's a feminist, not a radical feminist, but she is the CEO of Facebook, one of the biggest, richest tech companies in the world. You see her, she's just unapologetically feminine. You look at Hillary, I mean, seriously, think about this. Has Hillary ever worn a dress? This woman, and what is her name? The CEO of Facebook, Lean In. Yes. What's her first name?
Sheryl.
Sheryl Sandberg. She shows up to work. She probably, you know, doesn't wear a dress quite often, but she's comfortable in one. You know what? I'm comfortable in my femininity. I want to show you somebody. And we even think, okay, like, should women be in combat? I think, in a sense, no, we do not send women off to fight our battles. Men do this. But I want to show you somebody who, even for me, I see her, and I think most of us see this woman, and you're like, good for you, girl. You're rocking it. And if she were the daughter of any of us in here, regardless of our politics, we would brag on her like crazy, because we would all agree she is pretty stinking awesome. This woman, and I knew her name yesterday. She is, you can look her up, but... See, if she were a man, I would have remembered her. She is the first female fighter pilot in some of the references, say, in the military. Some say in the Air Force. But there is a video of her. It's a promotion video for the Air Force, for the military. Like, you know, women, there's a place for you. And this video, okay, I mean, and not only that, she is now the first female head of an entire fighter wing, which is hundreds and hundreds of pilots. She's the leader. So this video, and I was going to show it, but I didn't want to show you too many videos. This promotional video from the Air Force, it starts out,
Jeannie Leavitt.
The internet. Wonderful. You should have hidden your phone. All right? That's Jeannie Leavitt. 11, everybody knows that. But in the video, it shows her early on. And I mean, I don't think you'll take this as offensive, but she's super cute. Her hair is longer, it's curly. She has just these little, you know, very feminine little pearl earrings. And she's climbing into her jet like that. She's taking femininity into the cockpit of a fighter jet. This video that I'm telling you about, it starts out with an alarm going off. Wake up alarm. And the voiceover, my day starts like anybody else's day. And it shows her, she has two kids. She's fixing lunches. She's feeding the kids breakfast. Okay? And once, and her husband's there, he's a colonel in the Air Force too. Once, you know, she says, once we do that, we're out the door, and she's, you know, loading the kids into the van. I mean, it's remarkable, right? And she's like, we drop them off, and then I go to my work. And then it shows her going into a command meeting. And she sits down, everybody at ease. I mean, it's cool. She's like, she's the dude, you know? And she's running this. And then it shows her, and here's what I do. And it shows her climbing into the jet. And she's talking about the strategy of fighting enemies. And it was really fascinating to me. She's like, our life is seen through this lens. How do we protect the homeland? And how do we subdue any threats to us? And you see her, and again, all of us would be like, you go. She is a confident woman going into an unlikely world where most women aren't, and she is a woman there. You don't find women doing that who are like, you better believe I'm a woman, and you have to, you know, there's that confidence there. But it's not a man's confidence. She is there, and this is important, she is there on her own woman terms. You know, again, what that is like is I'm a black man, I'm a black woman, and I am here as a black woman, okay? I'm not backing off of that. I'm not going to try to be something different. That is pride in who you are. It's power and confidence in who you are, and there's women like this. And when you look it up, there's a whole bunch of other women like her. Amelia Earhart, okay? You look at her, and like, you see her in her jumpsuit, and you know, like her, and you know, she's got kind of a tough look, just like her, but no, she was unapologetically a woman, and she was not apologizing for it. She just went out and did what she wanted to do. Think about this woman as well. And again, when I speak on college campuses, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you guys know all about women and what they should be doing and to serve you and to, there's this woman's role. They talk about that a lot, gender roles. And they are so stinking narrow in their understanding of what a woman does. She is at the beck and call of her husband. She says, yes, sir, you know, whatever you want, sir. And like, I'm from Focus on the Family. I don't know any woman that I've ever seen within my community that acts that way. So they're the ones that live by and stereotype women in this way. So there was a woman a number of years ago, and she was the darling politically of the most hardcore people like us. Evangelical conservatives. Her name, you know who she is, Sarah Palin, okay? Did anyone in our community, well let's think about her, okay. So she's a mother, she's a wife, she can shoot any gun, loves to shoot any gun, knows how to shoot any gun, gets thrilled at the promise of being able to shoot any gun. She can field dress a moose all by herself, okay? She was the governor of a very large state, you know? She's out there doing it. There was nobody, nobody within our community who said, that woman just needs to get home where she belongs. We were all like, go girl. That's the thing. We were true feminists in the sense of, you know what? You get out there, sister. And she did it as a woman. Very attractive, very feminine.
Lipstick.
Exactly. Wonderful, you know, dresses and very attractive. And like, she has nothing to apologize for. That is power. That is strength. And again, the big point is, nobody in my community, nobody in your community said, like the radical feminists would assume we would, she just needs to get back home where she belongs.
Yeah.
Right? Chain herself to that oven. I mean, they don't even deal again in reality. It's like, if you want to criticize our movement, I can tell you the places to criticize. But you guys, I mean, you're just off in another land. Here's another person. She is not as significant, but, or, you know, as, I'm not going to say that I ever watched this show, but this old show, Trading Spaces, I watched it because I have a wife and I have daughters, okay? This show, Trading Spaces, how many know what that show was about? Okay, a number of you. Sir, please put your hand down. No, he knows it because somebody told him about it. You get two couples or two families in the neighborhood and they trade spaces and they both, you know, redesign a part of the house. Well, there was a host and then you had a designer and a carpenter that worked. And those carpenters, I mean, they had to do heavy work and get this thing done within an afternoon. Amy Wynn Pastor, I know her name because I was so doggone impressed with her, and especially with my daughters. This is her. She could rock anything, and she could keep up and surpass any of the guy carpenters, okay? So this is her. This is her. This is her, she could solve problems, and you know, there are times when she's like, dude, move out of the way, this is how you do it. Okay, but this is also her. And this is also her. And I was really struck, because at one show, you know, they said, okay, Amy Wynn, you see her every week, but look, she won an award for this show, and here's how she dressed when she went. And I thought, wow, she's pretty hot. Don't tell. She is an attractive woman. So over here, she can do this unapologetically. She can solve any carpentry problem, do anything, make anything out of wood and tools. But she's unapologetically, you know what? I am a woman, and I'm not ashamed of that. In fact, look at me, you know? And nobody again thought, even in our community, you know what, honey, you just need to get back home. And maybe you could be the interior designer, but you can't be the carpenter. That's ridiculous. Women don't do carpentry. All of us are like, you know what? And again, if that was our daughter, every one of us would brag about what she did. Well, my daughter's on TV. She's on this big show. It's very famous. Well, what does she do? Well, she's a carpenter. You know, like, no, this is what she does. And so again, this is that irony, is that people like us, who the Women's March is marching against, we are actually the ones that hold up womanhood, that celebrate womanhood, that say, you go, girl. I mean, in a sense, that is the most profound, contemporary, sort of simple feminist statement, isn't it? And any of us would be comfortable saying that. They would say, I mean, get this, you know it. Why do you call her girl? We can't win with you people, you know? I mean, really quite serious. Last night, and I didn't get to say this. Let me check my time. 10 minutes. Okay, good. Last night in that Atlantic article, she is talking about how men don't share their feelings. They need to be able to express their feelings more. And she says in there, and I was looking for the quote, I couldn't find it just real quick, but she says, I found that most of the boys that I talk to, their main confidants are their mothers, their sisters, and their girlfriends, and friends who are girls. You're like, yeah, isn't that kind of good? They do open up with their vulnerabilities, their fears. Isn't that what you're looking for? Not according to this woman. She says this. She says, and that's not good, because what these young men are being trained is that it's a woman's work to do the emotional support work. Right? I mean, if you're a guy like, honey, you just can't be pleased, can you? I mean, you know, they would think we're the ones who say that in our community, but like, you guys are setting these guys up. They cannot win. And you sound silly. Right? I mean, it is just ridiculous. And you see this. I mean, I don't even have to go looking for it. It's just there, time and time and time again. And I encourage you, as you're reading things, as you're seeing things, sometimes movies and shows, they really get it right. They're communicating, you know, what needs to be communicated. But if they're feminist writers, they're like, okay, you are not describing any world that I know, you know, any reality. This, again, the ironies of feminism. Be sexual on the man's terms. A woman's procreativity is a curse that needs to be solved by the pill and abortion. Your strength comes in the ability to not be pregnant. She must celebrate ending her child's life. See, a woman doesn't naturally come to that place to support abortion. She has to be brainwashed, essentially, to say that, yes, taking the life, I wanted to say killing the life inside me that I am nurturing, that every cell in my body is concentrating on, the way to be a real woman is to deny this and to end it. That's vile. From a woman's perspective, from a human perspective. But that's what the Women's March was all about. And it's interesting. The uterus, you see it all over, right? Little pens on those signs. It would be like going to an NRA march and you see guns, but never, never use that gun. In fact, turn it on its head and make it be a symbol for that which it was created to do. Are you getting what I'm saying? These women are celebrating the uterus, and the thing is, never, never, never let the uterus do what the uterus does. I mean, just again, remarkable. Caring for her children is a trap. Depending on a husband for support and protection is a weakness. Most women, and they'll agree with that, but most women, when you ask them, would you like your husband to be the primary breadwinner in the family? Even if the woman is a little more to the left and she is making a fantastic salary, she wants her husband to be the tip of the spear, if you will. Okay, I'm making a whole lot more money than him, but he goes out every day and works. He has a career. So that if something happens and I just want to stay home and care for my children, I have this fallback. He is taking the lead there. Not in a powerful way, in a servant way. Remember the three P's? He's providing, he's protecting. I love this, and I'm going to end with this. The, you know, kind of what we talked about last with Jordan Peterson of, you know, the equity. Yes, things should be split between men and women. And so this is a good idea, and men, you should try this. You're in bed at night. It's dark. There is a noise downstairs, glass breaking. There's a bump. And your wife is, hey, I hear something. And he goes, you know what? I'm egalitarian. Right? I did it the last three times. But now it's your turn. Okay? If a guy did that, like, I mean, that's just bad. And the woman knows it's bad. But he goes, no, 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 I have confidence in you. You're a strong woman. You can do anything. I am woman, hear me roar. Go downstairs and roar. You know, it just, it does not work itself out in real life. Five minutes, okay, good. This goes into the politics of things. Now, we saw that data earlier from the paradox of increasing female unhappiness. At the very same time when women have more opportunities, more power, more influence in the marketplace, in politics, in everything, right? And this is another thing. Let me start with this slide. Okay, this is a woman. She's a sociologist, Diane Pierce. She wrote this article, and she's a feminist. She wrote this sociological article, and she coined this phrase, the feminization of poverty. And in sociology, probably most of you have heard that phrase. In sociology, that's a working phrase that all sociologists know. The feminization of poverty, women, work, and welfare. She is saying poverty, this is in 1971, okay? Abortion has been a thing. The pill, which I'm gonna talk about, came along in like 67. Independence, women have gotten the vote, all this stuff. But she says, first line, poverty is rapidly becoming a female problem. Why? Because women are not getting out and working? They're lazy? No. She goes on to say, though many women have achieved economic independence from their spouses, from, you know, and their participation in the labor force, for many, the price of that independence has been their pauperization and dependence on welfare. Down here, perhaps the most striking of these trends is the increasing number of female-headed families. The percentage of all families that were female-headed increased almost 40% from 1950. Okay? So this is that picture. Okay? Abortion rights are developing. The pill is developing. Look at that. You know what that is? It's men saying, you know what, honey? That's not my responsibility. You were on the pill. You have abortion. You're independent. You can dictate your own future. So knock yourself out and dictate your own future. This other study, this is from a Nobel Prize winning economist, George Akerlof. That he published in 1996. Do you recognize this name? Yeah, she's the woman that for a long, long time under Obama was in charge of the Fed. That is George Akerlof's wife. You know, I mean, they're players, okay? They did this study together, an analysis of out-of-wedlock childbearing in the United States. What they found, because they're honest researchers, was fascinating. They said in the emergence of the pill and the emergence of widespread abortion that shotgun marriages declined, you know, men did right by the woman. And their dads, their brothers, their, you know, to-be brother-in-law said, you're going to step up and you're going to do right by my daughter. You're going to do right by my sister, you know. The man stepped up and did what he did. The pill comes along, abortion comes along, and Akerlof is saying exactly what I just said. You know what? Good for you. You're independent. You can make your own way. I have no responsibility for your outcome of your fertility. And that out of wedlock child just goes up. It's not because they don't know how to use contraception. It's not because they don't know what sex does. It's because their independence lets the man off the hook for his sexual responsibilities. And therefore, the feminization of poverty. There are unseen consequences to these seemingly, I mean, in the whole scheme of things, female-controlled contraception is, you know, hypothetically a very, very good idea, but there's downsides to that. It lets the man off, and it's everything that we talked about this morning, you know? It limits the woman's influence. Now, Christianity, I'll end with this. We have to understand that Christianity is the first and most powerful feminism. Christianity is the first philosophy, religion, system of belief that sees men and women as equals. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created a male and female. Think about if you went to a feminist conference and everybody from every culture and every religion and every philosophy got to stand up and say, why do you think women are important? You'd hear a lot of different things. The Christian stands up and says, we think women are important because they image God, the God of the universe, the all-powerful. They uniquely image God in the world like no other part of creation does. You have trumped what everybody else would have said. Being the image of God is a pretty cool thing. You know, Christians understand that. We need to respect the woman, the femininity, because that part of humanity, just like and equally just like manhood, images God. Here in the New Testament, Ephesians 5, husbands, love your wives. It doesn't say husbands, use your wives as your servants. Husbands, use your wives as the ones who take care of all your needs, gives you hot food and sex when you need it. Just as Christ loved the church. You guys, just as Christ loved the church is a radical statement. Radical. What is it that Christ did for the church? Right? That is what Christians believe about the man's responsibility to the woman and gave himself up for her. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own body. I mean, you know, Paul is saying, dude, as much as you're into yourself, be into your wife that way. Here's the bottom line. America, Europe, the places where radical feminism has developed is built upon the historic tradition of Christianity. Okay, radical feminism does not come out of an Eastern thought. Radical feminism does not come out of Islam. It comes out of those countries that were established and practiced the equality of women from the very start based on its Christian heritage. And it simply took that to a more, you know, radical form, if you will. But they do not understand. Female equality does not stem from the Enlightenment. It existed before that. Christianity, as it came into the Roman and Greek culture, was radical in so many ways. And one of the ways that it was radical is how it treated children,
how it treated women, and how it treated sexuality. And as it spread around the world, it taught other cultures, no, you cannot dominate the women. You need to love them. You need to care for them. You need to respect them. Christianity is the most radical and influential feminism that the world has ever known. Thank you.